Hey, this is Dan Hansis alongside Chris Wessling.
Hey, Dan.
Mark Sessler and the boss, Greg Rosenthal. We're the Around the NFL podcast. Check us out three times a week as we discuss the latest NFL news as it happens. Always, of course, with a touch of mirth. Subscribe at NFL.com/podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? James Coe here on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast, joined alongside by the whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gilhar. What's up?
Not too much. This is kind of an exciting episode because we're playing a man down or two men down over here.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Adam Rank is tied up. Yep. Marcus is I believe currently in Amsterdam.
Uh oh.
So it's just you, me, and the one and only franchise here holding down
the fort. Franchise. Mark Franciscovich. Matt Franciscovich. I feel like there's too many Matts here.
We've got a lot of Matts.
So many Matts.
There's too many Matts. We got the franchise. What's up, man?
What's up, James? I'm glad I have a unique nickname.
The franchise.
Yes.
Bless Adam Rank for giving that to you.
Do you have the best beard in fantasy?
I don't know. We're gonna have to wait and see.
No, it's
what does Matt Harmon think about that?
I think Harmon. I know he's proud of his beard, but I think he'd have to defer to you and your beard. It's luscious these days.
That's what I'm saying. It's the density.
It's like straight up hockey playoff beard, like those ferocious beards the guys have by the time they get to the Stanley Cup Finals.
That's what
franchise is rocking.
See, well, no, because see, those are more scraggly.
But I was gonna say, it's
playoff beards are scraggly
in girth and like thickness.
Yes,
it's playoff beard, but it's much more well kept.
It is. It's impressive. It is very impressive.
All right, does need to be groomed from time to time.
I would imagine. Looking at that bad boy, I would imagine so.
Yep.
I would imagine so. I would also imagine you're not shy about grooming the beard.
Nope.
Okay. All right. We'll move on. Let's talk about sophomore positional battles. Gilhar?
Well, Franchise and I, since he came back, we were banging out some content looking at all of the fantasy-relevant sophomores at quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. Got a bunch of good pieces you can find on NFL.com/fantasy or from our Twitter accounts or the new NFL Fantasy Facebook page. Most of them have been posted there. But just looking at what these guys might have in store for year two, because some were great successes like Todd Gurley, Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. Others, Melvin Gordon, Amir Abdullah, not so much.
Yeah.
So off of that, since this is legitimately the darkest period in the NFL season, all the guys are off.
It might be the darkest period in sports, period, right?
No, I mean, it is true.
There's like not a lot going on, man.
Hockey just ended.
Right.
Basketball just ended.
Yep.
Football's gone dark.
Nobody cares about baseball.
Basically, all we have is baseball. And
and we have midseason baseball. It's like even the players don't care about baseball right now.
The All-Star break is legitimately like, a week away?
It's so sad.
So it's a dark time in sports, but so since we just did all this studying on these guys,
we
thought it would be fun to put some of them head-to-head and have us debate who's going to score more points. We also put it out to you guys on Twitter, and thank you to everybody who voted.
There you go.
Some interesting results that we will dive into here, but that was the inception for this podcast rundown. As I was scrambling yesterday, I was like, what in the hell are we going to talk about? Like I went to NFL.com/news. I was like, are there any headlines I missed? And I was like,
nope,
nothing. Missed.
All right, we do have a couple of top headlines though, so let's get to those.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Whistles go. Woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
All right, the first one. I don't even know what the what's the date line on this one. What should it be? Well, it doesn't matter. Former NFL coach Buddy Ryan passed away at the age of 82. I was like, Dateline Chicago? Dateline Arizona?
I'm not sure.
Dateline, I'm not exactly sure.
That's a good question.
It doesn't matter. Buddy Ryan, the world-famous coach, football coach, a defensive mastermind, passed away at the age of 82. His legacy, there's no question about it, very deep and very impactful in the NFL. I mean, he's got two sons coaching in the NFL already, so it's like, come on. His impact was felt there.
He was the mastermind of
our 46 defense.
Yep, one of the greatest defenses ever to set foot on an NFL field, the 85 Bears. Had a lot of good years in Philadelphia, too. So.
He did. He also had a couple of infamous years with Houston.
Yes, he did. Punch? There's the punch, but there's the Houston, I think it's like Houston 93 or something like that, is a Football Life. It's really good. And you can read Wesseling, Chris Wesseling,
right,
did a long form, Love You Blue, about that team. And there's a lot of good Buddy Ryan nuggets in there.
Okay. I was a fan of that team.
That was a fun team. Like, I wish I had been more cognizant of, like, what they were doing at that time on the field. But
well, because I lived in Houston until I was, like, 10. And that was just a little bit after I had moved, but man, I was still following that team super close, and I was like, did that coach just try to punch the other coach? I was so confused.
Yep.
I was so confused because you had never seen that before.
No.
But Buddy Ryan, a very controversial figure. There's no question about it. But
colorful.
Very colorful. There's no question. Yes. Yeah, he's passed away at the age of 82. And there's a lot of stuff on him, man. There's a lot of stuff on him, both positive and negative. He was a very interesting character. There's no question about it.
Absolutely.
All right, so RIP Buddy Ryan. I do want to go to Baltimore, though.
Okay.
Mike Wallace says he's, quote, better since leaving the Steelers.
Hmm.
I mean, a deadpan stare from the Wiz.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. I looked at that. I looked at that one. And I was like, okay, Mike Wallace. You know, he had an amazing year with the Steelers, where I think he scored 10 or 11 touchdowns or whatever it was, averaged like 21 yards per catch.
Yeah,
was a sensation. Got paid all this money and has never been the same player since. And yes, he was scored 10 touchdowns a couple years ago in Miami. A lot of those just came in the red zone, though. So this is, you know. Whatever. I mean, it could be exciting for the Ravens in the respect that they're probably going to be a more pass-heavy team. Mark Trestman's tended to be a pass-heavy coach, but
right. To your point, he came from a Vikings offense that was leaning very heavily on the run game, Adrian Peterson, all that. He's 29 years old, but he posted last year a career low in, I think, catches, receiving yards. Here it is. Yep, receiving yards, yards per catch, and touchdowns. Those are all fantasy relevant numbers.
Some would say.
but as you mentioned, though, man, like he's going to a Baltimore team. You know, I read an interesting piece on why he's a good sleeper candidate, and I buy it. Everyone's dead in Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, who's catching the ball there?
Kamar Aiken.
And? I mean, look, I know I'm sitting
Kenneth Dixon?
Maybe some kind of running back committee that just.
I mean,
one of their 17 tight ends.
He's a consistent. Okay, let's just strike consistent. He's a downfield threat.
Yes. Glad you scratched consistent.
He's a downfield threat. Joe Flacco likes to throw the ball downfield, as you mentioned. Mark Trestman likes to throw the ball a lot.
Yes.
Interesting sleeper candidate. No.
Yeah, I don't want any part of it. I don't know about you, franchise. I don't want that volatility. If I was going to take a shot at any Ravens pass catcher, it would be Kamar Aiken.
Yeah, the thing is, he's going to cost you almost nothing.
So nothing. Nothing.
I mean, if you're going for a flyer in the late round, you might as well get a guy who's at least either the one or the two in Baltimore. I would think he's the one, and Kamar Aiken is the two. But
Steve Smith is probably I think the reason people are like, whatever about Mike Wallace is the fact that let's project out to like week 8, week 9. Steve Smith is back in the rotation, right?
Right.
But Mike Wallace probably takes a backseat.
But by that point, your fantasy season is 3/4 of the way over.
It is.
So,
I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, fantasy is a week-by-week proposition. You know?
Yes.
And if there are guys that you could hold on to for that long, more power to you. That probably means you got a great team. But the fact of the matter is, you got to win in those first 4 or 5 weeks.
Right.
If you go down, you know, 1-3, you're in a dark place, my friend.
I understand the logic in liking Mike Wallace, but I, you know, fantasy ultimately at the end of the day, too, is about having fun, and I will not have any fun deciding whether or not to start Mike Wallace and then watching him score 0 points on my team and then 22 points on my bench. So for that reason, I mean, there are other high upside guys that I'd rather take because they might be more fun for me to watch or root for, but.
Right.
I won't be taking many shots at Mike Wallace. Maybe like in MFL 10s, but.
Sophomore positional battles. Okay, again, so we're kind of taking a look at second-year players.
Yep.
And we're trying to figure out who's going to be the better season-long fantasy play. Am I right in saying that?
Correct.
Season-long fantasy play?
Correct.
All right. We'll start at the quarterback position. How about Jameis Winston versus Marcus Mariota? The poll results came in.
Pretty
split.
Pretty even.
50-50.
Yeah.
Was the vote. Winston versus Mariota. What say you, Wiz?
Well, I actually just did the study on these guys. I watched a bunch of games for each. I looked at the what's changed for them from year one to year two.
Okay.
All that jazz. And if I have to give the nod to anybody, I'm giving it to Jameis Winston because...
Is that right?
I think in just purely, I think he's the better passer. He's got a better deep ball. He's a little bit more accurate. Marcus Mariota's more accurate than him on the move probably, but Winston could improve there. He lost a bunch of weight this offseason. He also has a true number one threat, and he has an elite receiver in Mike Evans.
Yeah.
Mariota, on the other hand, his number one receiver right now is some mix of maybe Kendall Wright, DGB, maybe a fifth-round rookie named Tajay Sharpe. Like, there is a lot of upside there with Mariota from his legs and if he runs more. And I mentioned the piece, Mike Mularkey, he's talked about bringing that exotic smash mouth to the fold. And when Cordell Stewart was his quarterback in the original exotic smash mouth, he averaged about 6 rushing attempts a game, which turns into about 90 on the year.
Have we figured out what the exotic smash, what does that mean?
We don't know specifically. So that's what I was trying to surmise. I can't imagine them having their second year face of the franchise running the ball 90 times this year, like on purpose. So even if he gets an uptick, I like it, but I just think Winston, he's got another year in Dirt Cutter system. He's getting more control at the line of scrimmage. He's built a better rapport this offseason with Mike Evans. He's lost weight. He's got just the core that I trust more around him.
He's got a better offense. There's no question.
We know Doug Martin can play. We know Charles Sims can play. Meanwhile, in Tennessee, we don't know if DeMarco Murray is fully washed or not.
Right.
Derrick Henry, I love him. I think he's going to be a beast, but we don't know for certain until we see him put the pads on.
Right.
So for those answers, I like both of them as late-round flyers, but if I'm going to pick one who I think is going to have a little bit higher of the fantasy ceiling in 2016, it's Winston.
All right, Beard, what's up? What say you, franchise?
I see both sides of this argument.
Okay.
I think it's a really good debate because I think no matter who you go with, you know, you're not going to lose because they're both great quarterbacks. I think Mariota's got the legs, and I think that's a little bit undervalued in fantasy. Like those rushing yards per game add up over time.
Oh, for sure.
Like last year, so Tyrod Taylor had the second most rushing yards among quarterbacks, 568.
It helps.
Yeah. It does help. Alex Smith had 498. Aaron Rodgers had 344. But I think just Mariota can run the ball. Winston has the weapons, and I think I'm going to go with Mariota because of the legs.
I think so too. I've got only me and Money even have Marcus Mariota ranked in our top 100. I don't know where you had Gil. I don't know where you've got them ranked, but I tell you what, man, the legs intrigue me. Because he didn't run almost at all last year.
Only like 32 attempts, I think.
And and what we saw was, I mean, how can you forget that? What was it, that 90-yard run?
It was like 87, I think. Right.
It was unbelievable. The kid's got some legs, and we saw that at Oregon, too. I don't know. You know, a lot of it has to be the fact that I'm a Pac-12 guy. I've seen this guy play way too often. As you mentioned, you're right. Jameis Winston's got better pieces around him.
Right.
But sometimes when a quarterback is asked to do everything and he does, watch out.
Right.
Oh, for sure.
Like Cam Newton.
Right. I like Jameis, especially dropping some pounds. He can scramble a little bit. We saw a couple good runs. And he's a big guy. Like, he could be he got 6 touchdowns last year on the ground,
which was surprising.
So he could vulture a couple on scramble things or just quarterback dives from Doug Martin and Charles Sims. So
that's true.
I think the rushing touchdown upside is there. Mariota's definitely going to get more yardage, but like I said, it's close. And honestly, like if I have to update my rankings now that we're in the dark period, but they'll honestly probably only be one spot away in my quarterback rankings.
So I guess it makes sense, right? The poll 50-50?
Yeah, 50-50. It's close.
And makes about sense.
I don't want to rain on anyone's parade here.
All right.
As we started recording, a little blurb came out on Mariota on RotoWorld saying that Mariota will hand it off 40 times a game if that's what it takes to win.
Smash mouth.
So, smash mouth, baby. Exotic.
So I don't know if they're going to run the ball 40 times a game, but that might, you know, if they're more focused.
First of all, they're only I love when teams say we're going to run the ball. You know, you have to be in the lead to run the ball.
Correct.
I mean, that's you have to be in a competitive ball game to run the ball.
No, you don't, James. If you want to just lose and you're behind, you can continue to run the ball. You don't have to pass it. If you just want to get on the bus and go home, you can keep handing that ball off.
That's true. That's true. That's how I felt about watching the Browns last year.
Oof.
You know?
Poor Browns.
Did the Browns play Tennessee at one point last year?
Uh, They did. Like week two, they beat him. They sacked Mariota 9 times.
I felt like that was like a game that that Red Zone went back to far too often. And I was like, no, we got to move on. We got to black this game out.
Why is this game on?
Why is this game on?
There were some exciting plays, actually, because that was one of the games I watched when I studied Mariota. But
there you go. Let's go to the running back position, shall we? High profile. Todd Gurley, David Johnson. The Twitter poll has it heavily in favor of Todd Gurley. 75-25.
Far and away the biggest landslide.
Todd Gurley, more fantasy points than David Johnson. I've got Gurley ranked 2 spots ahead of Johnson. As a matter of fact, I've got Ezekiel Elliott sandwiched in between Gurley and Johnson. So Gurley, Elliott, Johnson. But that being said, that's too big of a voting differential to me.
Yeah, this is crazy.
David Johnson's in a much better – we talk about offense versus talent or whatever it is. First of all, I love the talent level of David Johnson. Love it. He's in a better offense. There's no question about it. Todd Gurley, he's got a rookie quarterback. You would hope Goff will add some stability to it, at least on the back end of the season. We saw what he can do when he's right, Todd Gurley, and he's got that tantalizing talent.
Yeah.
But 75-25, Wiz, that's a big number, man.
That's, I think, what people might be overvaluing or undervaluing in terms of David Johnson is the passing work he'll
right.
get, the receptions. Todd Gurley.
How about the touchdown potential?
I mean, that too. I mean, Gurley had 10 touchdowns last year, and he, let's be honest, he's their number one threat in
right.
the red zone,
sure.
is to just give him the rock and hope he pounds it in. But Gurley only had 26 targets last year in 12 games and 21 catches, so pretty good catch rate. But that's not a lot of additional passing work. David Johnson is a former receiver, was probably the best pure pass-catching back to come into the league last year as a
yep.
rookie. And he's going to get the ball. Like, that's going to help his touches and his weekly floor. Like, he's not going to come off in catch-up situations, you know, which I don't know that Todd Gurley will. Maybe they've worked in Benny Cunningham there in the past. But, yeah, there's the excitement of Gurley having a full 16 games because he did 1,100, you know, put up 1,100 yards in basically 12 games last year. But man, that's where I would think they're going to be closer is that David Johnson will even it out through the air.
How much worry do you guys have in regards to that Rams offense? Any at all? I mean, look, I get it. Last year was a mess, too. They had a yep. worse quarterback situation, and Gurley still performed well.
Right.
I get that part. But, I mean, just common sense tells you there's got to be some concern there, no?
Yeah, there's some concern, but I think, like you said, we saw Gurley kind of transcend that situation last year. If we're talking about the wide receivers and the passing game, it's a different story. But I don't think any team will lean on the running back more than the Rams will lean on Gurley this year in the same vein that the Vikings lean on Adrian Peterson.
Right.
The Vikings and the Rams might be the only two teams that lean on their running back as much as they do. And for that reason, I think Gurley is the most valuable running back in fantasy because he's going to get all the touches. Maybe he won't get as much work in the passing game as a guy like David Johnson.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll matter. I think it'll even out by the end of the year.
I mean, in 2013, Gurley did have 37 catches for 441 yards and 6 touchdowns at Georgia. So we know he is a talented enough player. I don't think anybody doesn't think he can catch passes. I just, that
right.
offense that they had been running there didn't target running backs as heavily as
right.
David Johnson, who you look last year in his limited work, got
very limited
57 targets last year.
Right.
Very limited.
And people forget at the beginning of the year, like the first 6 weeks when David Johnson was getting like maybe 6 touches a game,
yeah.
he was still getting double digit fantasy points because he was doing big things with a small amount of touches.
I would be, I don't even think he was getting 6 looks a game.
Right.
It was, I mean, I think for yeah. the first 4 weeks, I mean, I literally think it was like 1 touch a game.
Right.
But as you mentioned, he did it through special teams. There was a catch and run that he had for a crazy amount of yardage and a touchdown. Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, he did a lot with very few opportunities. That's why people are super excited about David Johnson.
First 6 weeks of the year, here were his touch totals.
Okay.
1, 6, 10, 7, 3, 4. And then 5, 3, 1,
wow.
4.
Wow.
But in that span,
wow.
he scored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 touchdowns.
Wow. That's pretty good. It's pretty good. I'll say this. So the reason I've got Gurley ranked ahead of Johnson by 2 spots, I think he's a safer play.
Yeah.
But in
terms 100%.
Of, but in terms of upside, I think their ceilings are just about the same to
yeah.
me. And both of them are tremendous.
I might even put – I definitely agree with you, Todd Gurley's safer. I might put Johnson's ceiling a little bit higher because of that passing work.
I think you're right.
Like, think about if he gets targeted right. like Matt Forte used to in Chicago. If
right.
he gets 80 looks in that offense, you know, as
50,
a, as
60
a back,
catches or something?
50, 60 catches, 80 looks, like 700 receiving yards. Like,
oh, he'll do some damage.
If he becomes their featured back, like I – people were asking me on Twitter yesterday actually when this poll came out, like – aren't we worried about Chris Johnson coming back and vulturing touches? Like, yeah. He might get some, but I think Bruce Arians is a smart enough coach to know now that David Johnson is a difference maker in this offense, and they need to give him the rock. So he's a guy that could, if he gets the requisite touches, could honestly push for like 2,000 total yards.
Right.
I would agree with that. I would 100% agree with that. And it's like you said, the passing down work for a guy who's a very good pass catcher, he's going to put linebackers in trouble, man.
He's going to put safeties in trouble.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
One other thing that might concern me, though, regarding, like, the other running backs on the depth chart, like, if David Johnson gets a little banged up or something, has some kind of minor injury.
That's right.
They might just rest him because they have the depth.
That's true.
And
Andre Ellington's still there, yes?
Yeah, he is still there.
And Chris Johnson's
still there.
Yes. And in Gurley's case, like, if he's banged up, he's all they got. They might force him out on the field. Even if he's dealing with an injury, they'll make him play through it. He'll still get those.
Or, hell, matches. He might want to play through it.
Yeah.
Johnson, you mean?
Gurley.
Oh, Gurley. Yeah, that's what I mean. He might want to play through it. There's no one else there. Like, he's the guy they're leaning on. So that's another concern I would have. If David Johnson's minor injury, there's guys that can back him up. If Gurley has an injury, he's just going to be out there every game no matter what.
Jay Ajayi versus Matt Jones. This one was super close as well, 53-47, pretty darn close. The favors Jay Ajayi just a touch.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I know you, Gelhar, you're not very high on Matt Jones.
No, I mean, if he earns the featured back job there, I would feel a little bit more comfortable about him, but I don't have faith that he will, and I think he's going to lose a lot more work than somebody like Jay Ajayi will right now, because Miami's basically put to rest the rumors that they're going to acquire Arian Foster. So the only real threat to touches that Ajayi has is going to be Kenyon Drake in the passing game. And there, it came out recently that Ajayi had been struggling a little bit in the passing game, which is okay. You know, running backs aren't always the best at catching passes, but
right.
I think he's going to be their guy. He's going to be their red zone threat. He's a big, powerful running back, so he's got the touchdown upside for them. And he's going to get the lion's share of the carries in that offense, which should be – I think he's a safe bet to put up RB2 value, whereas the range of outcomes for Matt Jones for me is anywhere from, like, high RB2 to RB4.
Yeah, the risk is much higher with Jones. And you're getting them basically in the same – I think both fifth-round ADP.
Are they going that high?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they?
Both are certainly going that high.
Oy.
The other thing with Ajayi and the struggle –
it's a hefty price to pay, man.
I don't mind it for Ajayi. Yeah. It worries me for Jones.
There's a lot of risk, yeah.
The
other thing for Ajayi in the passing game, he caught 50 passes in his junior year at Boise State.
Yes, he can catch
passes. He's a three-down back. I think these little blurbs about guys dropping passes in OTAs are way overblown.
That's very true. It's a good point.
Yeah.
For the record, Ajayi is going on average on NFL.com at pick 46 in the middle of the fifth round. Matt Jones is going 73rd right now in the eighth, actually. I think other places have him higher. We had him ranked a little lower after our
ranking summit.
Our Council of Rankings.
And
so that's why he's going a touch lower on our side here.
Jay Ajayi, you've got him at 38 overall. And again, I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire here because, I mean, obviously the rankings have to be updated. It's funny because I like Jay Ajayi. I feel like I like Jay Ajayi, but I've got him ranked so low. I've got him at 68.
Whew.
I've got him at 68. I've got Matt Jones at 63. A big part of my rankings looking the way they do, though, and I know a lot of people won't agree, I'll get guys like Ben Roethlisberger up there. You know, I'll put Aaron Rodgers way higher. I'll put Cam Newton way higher.
Right.
Mostly because there's so much volatility once you start getting to these second, third running backs. And for me, give me an elite guy. And if I'm going to take an elite guy, I'm going to rank him higher than somebody like Jay Ajayi, who I think has still some question mark. It's so funny, man. I like him. I like him in Miami. I like him in the Adam Gase system. But can I say one thing, though, that does give me some pause for concern?
Certainly.
I think Miami's defense is going to be garbage. I think Miami's defense is going to be trash. And for that reason, I don't think they will lean on the running game as much. I'm starting to really come around to liking Devontae Parker, to liking the passing game, Landry, Tannehill. I'm really coming around to liking the passing option a lot more, because the more I look at that defense, the more question marks I have, or the more question marks there are, and I just think they're going to be playing from behind or going to be having to score a lot of points, a lot. And for that reason, and then I think about Adam Gase too, right? A passing guy. I'm starting to really come around to that Miami passing attack.
He did get some very, very solid running back seasons as an offensive coordinator too, though. His first one in Denver was the No'Shawn Moreno-like miracle year.
The miracle year.
The 2013 year where he finishes like the RB5 or whatever fantasy. The year after that, it was the split of Hillman and CJ Anderson. But once he started feeding CJ Anderson the rock, CJ went crazy down the stretch. And even last year, Matt Forte was having a great year, got injured. Langford came in, had some good work. And once Matt Forte came back, they both had productive weeks.
Right.
So he does love the pass, but I think that sets up a productive running game as well.
There you go.
One quick note, I think before you change, I was just looking at this. So Matt Jones last year had 8 games with double-digit carries.
Okay.
He only averaged more than 3.45 yards per carry in 2 of those games.
That's below average.
Poor.
It's not great.
It is below average. That's not very good. Melvin Gordon, Amir Abdullah. Can I say pass?
This one, actually, I had just checked again.
Okay.
Tipped 51% to Amir Abdullah, 49% to Melvin Gordon, as of the last votes.
Can I take a mulligan on this one? This one, I don't even want to think about this one. This one gives me heartburn.
I think the biggest thing here is, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, is Amir Abdullah might be a member of a committee in Detroit, and Melvin Gordon is going to be the feature back in San Diego, and I think
How dare you disrespect Danny Woodhead like that? I thought what you were setting it up for is Amir Abdullah might be a part of a committee. Melvin Gordon is part of a committee. And then he's the featured back. I wanted to tip stuff over back here.
I had an internal struggle about this Melvin Gordon thing in the last couple weeks.
Okay.
After I wrote this article, I jumped on the Melvin Gordon train, hype train, or whatever we want to call it. I don't even know if it's a hype train anymore. But I'm on board with Melvin Gordon.
Why is that?
Because he isn't going to cost you much. There's no way he doesn't score a touch. He had, 207 touches or something last year? And he didn't score a touchdown. That's an anomaly. That's not going to happen again. He's going to get in the end zone this year. He's going to get all the early down work. And he looks – yeah, there's concerns with his knee. He's at a good place right now. That surgery was back in January. By the time the season starts, we'll be 8 or 9 months out. And I think he said one of the biggest things that he struggled with was the mental part of the game. And now he's got a year of learning the playbook, a whole offseason to learn more of the playbook. And I think Melvin Gordon is going to have a bounce back here and going to surprise a lot of people. And for a guy who's a starting running back to get him in the 7th round, I think that's amazing value, and I'll take him there all day.
Fantasy football calculator, Melvin Gordon going in the middle of round 7. What pick is this? Pick number, whatever. He's the 27th running back off the board. He's going in the middle of round 7 in a 10-team league, and Amir Abdullah is going at the end of round 7. So they're very, very close. Very, very close. But, man, I don't know. I want no piece of either one guy, man.
But, I mean, if you had to choose.
If I had to, if I absolutely had to, I guess I'll go Amir Abdullah just based off of upside.
We'll give a little shout out to our friend Brad Evans over at Yahoo Sports. Okay. He's been on Twitter a lot, like going to bat and then, you know, fighting for Melvin Gordon.
Yep.
And he wrote a good little piece. You can check it out on Yahoo. But he pulled some other metrics that work in favor of Gordon and speak to how terrible his offensive line was and stuff like
that. But have
year.
They addressed that?
People are just going to be healthy this year.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
I think they scooped up some.
That's true.
They scooped up some draft picks that I think there's a center that they got that Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks really like. I heard them talk about it on Move the Sticks. But
okay.
So Gordon's had 0.18 tackles avoided per attempt, was number 8th at his position. His 2.2 yards after contact outpaced guys such as LeSean McCoy, Devonta Freeman, and DeMarco Murray. He had an 89.2 catch percentage, which was outstanding, number 3 among all running backs. And 8.1% of his runs went for 10 or more yards, which isn't too bad. I was looking at that stat too myself, and some of the best guys were around like 10 to 13%, so he's not too far off of that behind a terrible offensive line.
Okay.
There's reason for optimism. I think I would side Abdullah. I don't know.
You guys can have him. You guys can have him.
Look, Gordon's got that microfracture, man. I just can't get around that. I just cannot get around that surgical procedure that has absolutely destroyed the careers of numerous athletes. I just can't wrap my mind around it. I really can't. I think the defense, again, in San Diego is still going to be horrible. You know, Danny Woodhead is still there. He was clearly the better player when both guys were healthy. And Amir Abdullah, I mean, look, I'm not in love with Amir Abdullah either. Yeah. I think both guys are just, quite frankly, I think both guys are going to be a bust next year.
Yeah.
I think both guys are being heavily overdrafted right now as we speak today. Seventh round, there's no freaking way I would pay that price for Gordon or Abdullah. There's just no way. Are you kidding me? No way. Double-digit rounds, fine. Okay, great. But, I mean, where they're going right now, there's absolutely no way I'm taking either one of those guys.
Sounds okay. Good.
All right, well.
Let's go to the wide receivers.
That's fine.
Let's go to wide receivers.
Tyler Lockett, Devontae Parker. Lockett with the edge, 55-45, according to Twitter. What say you? Franchise.
This is a hard one because they're both – I mean, Lockett had an amazing rookie year. Devontae Parker, we only really saw at the end of last year.
Right.
And he was still coming back from that foot injury, so he might not have been 100%. I think I like Tyler Lockett's upside more because what do they got? Doug Baldwin. Tyler Lockett's probably their number two, which I think some recent news reports have pointed at. And Parker.
Sure.
Parker will be Miami's number two, but I think Landry is the target hog there. And there's some other guys in that passing game that could soak up targets other than Parker.
Are there?
Yeah.
Are there, though?
They're loaded at wide receiver.
Like,
in Miami.
Let's just X off Kenny Stills. He's like, no.
Another guy that James just buried.
Let's just X him off.
But if it's a conversation between Lockett and Parker, I'm going to go Lockett.
Okay. Wiz?
This one's hard because I think I like Lockett better as a player and what he put on tape as a rookie.
That's right.
He's got the better quarterback, and he's in an offense that I think could be skewing a little more pass heavy.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
The reason for optimism with Devontae Parker, though, is that Adam Gase has pummeled his number one like outside receiver with targets in the past.
That's what I'm saying.
Like Demaryius Thomas.
That's what I'm saying.
Alshon Jeffrey. Those guys were huge target hogs, and he likes having that big threat. And Devontae Parker, even though he barely played last year, is probably the team's best threat in the red zone now because of his size and his leaping ability. I mean, Jarvis Landry's great.
But he was good down the stretch, too. I mean, let's not mitigate what he did down the stretch. Devontae Parker was pretty good down the stretch.
He had a couple good games. I watched all of his stuff recently for the sophomore wide receiver study, too. Lockett got more consistently open against man and against zone, and he's got that deep speed. I think – oh, God, it's so close. It's so close. I think I would side Lockett just by a hair as well because I like what he offers – on an individual basis more, and I like his quarterback.
All right, so yeah. I like Lockett. I love Lockett. When my initial rankings came out, I got Lockett at 69 overall, Devontae Parker at 74. So they're
nice.
Very close. But I will say this: the more I've looked at the tape, the more I've thought about situations. I'm leaning a little bit more towards Devontae Parker right now. I think Tyler Lockett's got better upside.
Yeah.
I think his skill, like what his skill set is going to lend itself towards more volatility. But that being said, I think he's got higher upside because he's just a freak athlete. Devontae Parker is a good athlete, not a freak athlete, very smooth as a wide receiver. But you mentioned it, man. the Adam Gase effect, they pound their target. They've got two guys. They've got Landry, they've got Jarvis Landry, and they've got Devontae Parker. Mm-hmm. I think Landry fills that underneath role, but when you start talking about touchdown potential, man, I really like what Devontae Parker's got there. And here's the other thing, too. Again, I mentioned it before. Their defense is going to be garbage. It's going to be trash. All due respect to Ndamukong Suh, who's there. I get it. Okay.
They made some moves on defense.
He's one guy. I'm not impressed with what they got defensively, and I think they're going to be playing from behind quite a bit. That being the case, I think what we saw last year with the Jags, I always point to the Jags because the Jags had a horrible defense last year. And as a result, we saw their offensive guys able to shine. Allen Hurns came out of absolutely nowhere to score double-digit touchdowns. Allen Robinson, to everyone except Matt Harmon, came in pretty much out of nowhere. I don't even think Matt Harmon could have projected 14 touchdowns for Allen Robinson. And then we saw the quarterback, too, also develop as well. So, I don't know, man. In Miami, I like what they got going on. The more I really start thinking about their situation, the more excited I get about Miami, especially considering the draft prices on some of these guys. I think these guys are going to be huge bargains come draft day. I'm all in on the Miami offense, especially given their draft price.
James, have you learned nothing from recent history? I feel like this is the time every year everybody gets excited. Ryan Tannehill's going to take the next step. No, let's go back to 2012. He's got his college coordinator. It's going to be great. No. Now, last year, Ryan Tannehill's going to progress. He's got good weapons. He's been in the same offense for years. No. That's why, our Greg Rosenthal, I forget if we talked about this in the last pod or not, he wrote a good piece on why Tannehill could break out. And when they tweeted it out from the Around the NFL handle, I quote-tweeted and said, oh, I see we've reached the Ryan Tannehill's going to break out portion of the offseason. We run into
very
this
good.
Every year, and it has
very
not
good.
Worked out ever.
All right, fine.
So, I understand those reasons to get excited, but
yes.
I think the trump cards for me is Ryan Tannehill and that Tyler Lockett is a better quarterback, and I like him more as a player so far.
Kevin White, Doriel Green, Beckham. Kevin White, 58%. DGB, 42%. Wiz, where do you lean?
This is a tough one for me because while I like Kevin White as the player more, even though he hasn't set foot on an NFL field yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's the surprising thing about this number, is it not?
Yeah. And I think the trouble is, and here's why I think people have sided with the fact that White is beating Doriel Green Beckham by a sizable margin, is they're picturing in their heads the Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, both finishes a top 12 fantasy wide receiver year. However, that coach and coordinator is gone. It is now John Fox, who has been historically a run-heavy coach. It's Dowell Loganes, who hasn't had a ton of super fantasy success as a coordinator.
That's right.
And this is a team that's probably going to be run first with their committee backfield of Langford and Howard. So that is what concerns me about Kevin White when thinking about drafting him, or if he's going to be far outscore somebody like DGB.
I don't even have him in my top 100, Kevin White.
You don't have Kevin White in your top 100?
I don't have him in my top 100. And, I mean, that's not saying much because I think the rest of the guys, you guys got him in the 90s. You guys got him in the 90s. Who's the highest? Adam Rank is the highest. Adam Rank is Chicago.
So go figure.
He's got, but even he has him at 82. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying much by saying I don't have Kevin White in my top 100.
In the sophomore wide receiver study I did, I pulled up this nugget, was that in the offenses under Trestman, when Marshall and Jeffrey had those massive years, and Trestman's entire tenure as an NFL head coach or offensive coordinator, his offenses have averaged finishing 8th in pass attempts versus 21st for offenses led by John Fox.
Right.
And if you take out the few years John Fox had Peyton Manning when he was basically the offensive coordinator, his offenses sink to 25th in pass attempts.
Woo.
So the volume takes a huge hit from that coordinator standpoint.
Big time.
And Alshon Jeffery's the number one guy there. Zach Miller's going to command some looks because he's got a rapport with Jay Cutler. Kevin White's been working in the offseason, but the concern with Kevin White is that he's not going to get the looks that people are expecting.
I don't even know. I mean, we don't even know what he's going to look like, period.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. He's somebody I'm very excited to watch in the preseason. So I guess right now,
I don't know. I don't know how you don't go Doriel Green. I just don't know. I don't get it.
I think I have to tip the scales in favor of DGB at this point.
Is DGB not the number one guy in Tennessee?
Well, right. this is all the off-season swirling rumors that Tajae Sharpe starting ahead of him and stuff like that. But
DGB has the potential to be where Kevin White will be the number two in Chicago because of Alshon Jeffrey.
There you go.
So DGB has the upside.
I think we could say that no matter what, right?
Right.
And DGB, if he is healthy and he is on the field, is going to be one of the primary red zone threats there because he's 6'5" and has a 30-something vertical inch leap.
He's a monster.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch him play out there, you're like, I mean, he looks like a giant out there. He looks like an absolute giant.
So he just needs to put it all together. So yeah. I think it's a very close call, but I think I would side DGB as of this point without seeing Kevin White.
I mean, you got to keep in mind too, going into last year, he basically took a year off football.
Yeah.
Last year, he was the first year of football in 2 years. What is he going to look like this year? I'm really excited about DGB. He's one of my favorite sleepers. I like the quarterback situation there in Tennessee, Marcus Mariota. We talked about before. I think he, to me anyways, looks like the number one guy there in Tennessee. What's there not to like? I mean, the projection on Kevin White is kind of interesting. I'm surprised it's 58-42.
Yeah.
Is it because Tennessee was such a, I don't know, has been for so long so bad?
Well, I think it's just that DGB had trouble staying healthy last year. He's made some boneheaded decisions in the offseason in the past. He came out of shape last year is what they were saying, too. He's already been nicked up a little bit this year. So I think people are more excited about Kevin White, who seems more focused. He's been putting in extra time with Cutler and stuff, as opposed to DGB, who right now people feel like is kind of an enigma. So,
All right, franchise?
I would go DGB just because of what we said. He has the upside to be that team's number one wideout. Kevin White, we don't even know what he's going to be. I mean, you're drafting Kevin White based on potential, and you're basically guessing. And I don't want to waste a draft pick on a guess. At least with DGB, you know you're getting.
I mean, I don't mind taking Kevin White in rounds 12 plus.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a 12-team league,
just
okay, that's
of the
fine.
Situation.
I think his ADP right now is about round 11.
White's in the better situation.
Sounds about right.
But DGB has that year of actually being on the field. He didn't play every game, but he's actually played in NFL games before, and I think I would lean towards him because of that.
That's so funny. You know, that's what's so funny to me is that, like, there's this perception that Chicago is a better situation for the pass catchers than Tennessee. I don't necessarily know if it's that clear for me. For many of the reasons that Gelhardt pointed out, that John Fox is a head coach, it's a low-volume attack. And plus, they've got running backs there, right? So, like, that works into what John Fox wants to do, which is pound the ball. He wants to pound the ball. And then you start thinking about Jay Cutler. Once he starts getting goo-goo eyes for a guy, I mean, it becomes a one wide receiver offense. Dorial Green Beckham, I think that offense is on the rise. I like the quarterback. I like what they did in the draft. They picked up Jack Conklin, addressed the offensive line a little bit. I know they still got a ways to go, but I don't know. I don't mind it.
The other thing is Tennessee had virtually no run game last year.
Right.
And I think this year it'll be a more balanced offense in that sense, which will benefit the wide receivers in general. So
I think the offense took a big step forward in Tennessee, and not that it took a step back in Chicago. I'm not saying that, but again,
they lost Forte.
I think between Langford and Howard and whatever they've got there, I think they'll be okay. It's not, and keep in mind too, they lost Forte. Forte's a fabulous player, but was getting a little long in the tooth.
Yes.
So I think they'll be okay. Devin Funchess, Stephon Diggs.
This is another hard one.
Funchess, 32%. Diggs, 68%.
I was kind of surprised to see this one skewed so heavily in favor of Diggs, but a franchise and I were talking about this before the show. My guess as to why people voted so heavily in favor of Diggs is because they're factoring in Kelvin Benjamin coming in and probably getting 20% of the targets in Carolina again. Greg Olsen's going to get another 20%, and Devin Funchess is going to have to battle for looks. Whereas Stephon Diggs is at worst the number two pass-catching option in his offense, potentially number one as Laquon Treadwell adjusts to the NFL game.
Right.
And we saw him put up some really good weeks there for a while, especially in PPR, once he came out of nowhere and dropped like 4 for 80 or something on the Broncos. And
yeah,
you watch his game tape, I was so surprised with Stephon Diggs. He's a smooth and very efficient route runner.
He's a
and
good athlete.
He can
good footwork.
He can get people lost following him and his routes, and it's very fun to watch.
I agree. I liked him coming out of college too, Maryland. I like guys who play for bad teams in college and actually shoulder the load. And that's what Diggs was for Maryland and those horrible unis that they have.
gotta take a dig at their unis. I'll show myself out. Good night.
Good night. I'll also say this about Devin Funchess, man. Again, I don't know how fair it is to go back to college, but I'll do it anyways. He's got shaky hands. He had shaky hands at Michigan, always has. And I don't necessarily know if he addressed those hands or he's developed at all as a wide receiver last year. I mean, Cam Newton's throwing you the ball. I don't know. I wasn't impressed with Devin Funchess last year. I think he was kind of a byproduct of opportunity.
He caught less than half of his targets.
Last year?
Yeah.
Is that right?
63 targets, 31 receptions.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That is
a red flag.
That's not even like not good. That's bad.
Right. That's a hands issue.
That's a hands issue.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I will pass on that one.
He's huge, though.
Oh, 6'5", 235.
So that makes him a red zone threat, but
I guess
we know the Panthers aren't really
throwing
the
ball. You
know
who's bigger than him, though? Cam Newton.
Yeah.
he's also a red zone threat.
Cam Newton's just going to be at the 1 yard line throwing passes up to himself.
Fades to himself.
Him in the end zone.
That would be the greatest play in NFL history if Cam Newton threw a fade to himself and caught it. And if I had to bet money on one player doing it in the NFL,
I could totally see him doing that. Absolutely. But no, there's too many other targets there in Carolina, man. I'll pass. I can't even see myself in any situation drafting Devin Funchess. I was at a draft party last year. I was hosting a DirecTV event, and I saw somebody took Devin Funchess in the like ninth round or something. I'm like, what are you doing?
Ooh.
I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm telling you, Devin, there's nobody there. Kelvin Benjamin's hurt. Devin Funchess is going to step in. He's going to be the new Kelvin Benjamin. I'm like, bro, no. The guy can't catch the ball.
No.
And last time I checked, that's pretty important for a wide receiver.
Yeah.
To be able to catch that ball. But wow, I didn't know his catch rate was that bad.
Me neither.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
All right, let's do Daily Daps to get out of here.
Let's do it.
All right, Daily Dap time. We go to Matt Francis Gritch, the franchise, the best beard in all of fantasy. What's up?
What's up? I'm going to give my Daily Dap to this artist called Blood Orange.
Blood Orange?
It's a Moncier. His real name is Dev Hines.
Okay.
He's a well-known producer, songwriter, really good guitarist. He's worked with Florence and the Machine, Solange Knowles in the past.
Pass on Solange, but that's okay.
But he's put out, he just put out his, I think, third solo album, surprise last night. It just came out online. It's called Freetown. Hold on.
All right.
Freetown Sound.
Okay.
And if I had to compare this guy to anyone, I would call him, he emotes some Prince action with his voice and the vibes of the music, like chill wave.
Okay.
Airy guitars and all kinds of stuff going on. So if you're into those kinds of tunes, check out Blood Orange, Freetown Sound. I haven't actually listened to it myself, but I'm really excited to as soon as this podcast ends.
All right. I like it.
Yep.
Alex Gilhar, what's up?
First Daily Dap has to go to the Iceland national team in the Euro soccer.
Where did that come from?
What a story. Like these
Where
guys,
did that come from?
They have a population of like 300,000, and they beat England in the knockout round 2-1. in a pretty convincing fashion. So sorry to any England listeners out there, but how can you not love the Iceland national team? Yesterday on Twitter, like after they won, a bunch of stuff was surfacing from like journalists out there and stuff of like showing the homes of the Iceland national people, like where they grew up. And it's legitimately like stone cottages on a lake in the middle of nowhere. And like one of my favorites was that the England manager made like $4.2 million per year or something, and the Iceland manager had to be a part-time dentist to pay the bills.
I heard that on the broadcast. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's crazy.
One of the guys that plays for the national team also like works at a gas station in the winter when he's not playing soccer.
Wow.
So it's just an amazing like underdog story, and it's kind of cool that we've had two on such a grand stage in the world of soccer this year, with Leicester City winning the Premier League and now Iceland making it to the round of 8 in the Euros. So, yeah. Daily daps to them. That's got to be exciting, and I'm sure there are crazy parties in Iceland right now. And then the second Daily Dap quick is to just the Game of Thrones finale. Like, episode 9, the Battle of the Bastards, was tremendous. And then they had – everybody was talking like, yeah, the finale is going to be good, but it'll probably be a letdown, but – holy crap, was that a fun finale with the stories they pushed forwards, the things they revealed, the teasers they left for next season, and I just think they've done a tremendous job. Like, a lot of people thought that the A Song of Ice and Fire book series was going to be unadaptable for TV or film, and credit to those guys, their whole team, you know, from the writing to the directing, cinematography, acting, and even the music. Like, holy, that music is awesome. Franchise and I were listening to it again yesterday because he found one of the main songs was on Spotify. And if you want to find that, I think we tweeted it out, so you can go to my Twitter and find the Spotify link to that song. But just Daily Daps all around. It's been a tremendous watch this season.
Good stuff. Yep. I will give Daily Daps out to a rapper by the name of Logic, a white rapper from Washington, D.C., I believe. He's got a new song out called Flexecution. he's a little bit of a, I don't know, kind of an, I don't want to say underground guy, because he is signed to a label. It's just not, he doesn't have a lot of... he's very popular online, super popular online. I just actually discovered him about, I don't know, maybe a few months ago. But I like the music. It's a little hit or miss, but when he hits, it's really good. When he misses, it's okay. But you know what? As a matter of fact, what rapper can you not say that about?
Yeah, it's very true.
Okay. A couple of podcasts I want to give a Daily Dap to.
Yeah.
This American Life. Their most recent episode, they had a thing called Choosing Wrong. If you're married, it's got a great intro. It'll hook you forever. But then it also goes into Wilt Chamberlain, about him, actually choosing wrong, like how he was a horrible free throw shooter, then decided to go underhand, was actually really effective for Wilt Chamberlain anyways. And then the next year he said, no, I can't do it. And then went back to regular free throws and was terrible again. That part of it was done by Malcolm Gladwell, which I then realized they said through This American Life. He's got a new podcast as well.
Nice.
It's called Revisionist History. Malcolm Gladwell's got a podcast called Revisionist History. No surprise here. A strong listen.
I can imagine.
So both of those pods, I give my full endorsement. This American Life, Choosing Wrong, and then Malcolm Gladwell, Revisionist History.
What is the Revisionist History podcast about?
So he takes a long look back at basically historical events.
Okay, cool.
And gives it the whole Malcolm Gladwell spin.
All right,
he does pretty cool.
He does a good job with it, and they're powerful stories. It's stuff that you would expect from Malcolm Gladwell. So it's pretty good. So there you go. All right, that's going to do it for the show today. NFL.com/draftkit. Go check it out today. NFL.com/fantasy.
Sign up.
Sign up your team. Sign up your leagues. And do your mock drafts today. See ya.